Today's talk is called That You May Be Able to Stand. Now, I don't mean standing up to sing. What I mean by stand, it comes from the Bible. It means to be able to stand firm in the day when Jesus Christ returns, to sail through that final day with flying colours, without regrets, to be caught, prepared and ready for his return. Because the Bible does teach that Jesus came as a baby at Christmas, but it does teach that he will come again as judge, as well as saviour and rescuer, and as king. And this today is really about being ready for his return. Now, I didn't choose this passage for you lot. It just happened to be what we're having to do in our series. But Zoe's surname is Dodge. And we're not going to dodge this. Okay? Now, so it's about the future. God is very loving. I mean, he's absolutely blessed Zoe. He's very loving, but he is also a judge. And he is coming back. And people who continually say no to him, they would regret it. But that's not his heart. We're not a fire and brimstone church. We believe in the love of God. But God does come in the end as judge as well. And we like to know about the future, don't we? I mean, we're going to talk about the future a bit today, so bear with me. I don't know if you guys read novels. I mean, if you ever read a whodunit mystery, and the dreadful books, but are you like me? You want to know the end before... So what you do is, before you finish reading it, you go to the end, and I always read the last two... No, there's people shaking their heads here. Very disciplined. I always read the last two pages to find out who done it. You know, so it was the vicar with the candlestick who killed his parishioner, you know, or something. Because you want to know the future. And today people read horoscopes, don't they? Because they want to know the future. Although I would advise not doing that. And a lot of my pastoral discussions with people is about the future. They say, well, how am I going to cope if I haven't got this job? I haven't got enough money. What if I get ill? What about this? And it's all, a lot of our worries are about the future. And today's Bible passage is about the future. Right. If you can see the picture, I don't know. But it does say on that screen, in the end, Jesus wins. Jesus wins. He's going to come back. And all the things you see on the news, which are absolutely awful, one day it will not be like that anymore. You see, Jesus is just. He's going to come back and put wrong things right. This is a clear teaching of the Bible. You may not believe that, but that is what he promised. He's going to right all wrongs. And if you want a small little picture of Jesus winning, can I suggest you look at Zoe? She was deep into witchcraft. Jesus blessed her and didn't judge her and beat her, but loved her into the light. Jesus wins. If you want an example of a winner, talk to Zoe. A famous Dutch missionary, who I think is an amazing lady, her name was Corrie ten Boom. She wrote these words. She said, do not be afraid. Read the last pages of the Bible. Jesus is victor. And that's not Victor Meldrew. It's Victor, the winner. Jesus comes as the winner. And I want to just say to you all today, he loves you. You may have funny ideas about God, I don't know, but he's on your side and he wants you to be on his winning side. Do you want to be on the winning side? Do you want to be on Zoe's side? Or do you want to be on the side that will end in defeat? Okay, the teaching that Christine read, it was taking place in the temple, a religious building the Jewish people had. Jesus was teaching in the temple. And as he stood there, some disciples of his said this. Some of his disciples were remarking about how the temple was adorned with beautiful stones and gifts dedicated to God. They were going, wow. You know, they came from Galilee, you know. There wasn't many big buildings in Galilee. They see this temple and they go, wow. And then Jesus says, hang on a minute. As for what you see here, the time will come when not one stone will be left on another. Every one of them will be thrown down. And what he was saying was, for the Jewish temple back then, the Romans were going to come, and they did, in the year AD 70, and they're going to destroy the temple. And he's saying that is an action of judgment because these Jewish people, God loved them, but they rejected him, they rejected him, they rejected him, and in the end, God's patience ran out. Do you know people with a very long fuse? No, very long fuse. God has a very long fuse. But in the end, the patience runs out, and the city of Jerusalem was destroyed, and Jesus predicted it. So he did talk about a future, a kind of judgment, and it's like, we don't like this, do we? We don't like this sort of stuff. But then, he didn't just stop there, he then leapfrogged on to talk about the end of the world. He sort of took that example of the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, and he said, that is a terrible thing, but hang on a minute, now, do you realise at the end of the world, something's going to happen, there's going to be an end of, the cataclysmic end of the universe. And what we're going to read, what we've seen, this, Jesus promised that he will return, and every one of us will be called to account. Okay? Now, I guess most of us hate the idea of this. And as I said, I didn't pick this because it was a baptism. It just happened to be what we've got. But mate, we don't like the idea of judgment. Well, can I just tell you a story to hopefully help you understand God's heart? Recently, my wife and I and my children went to Cornwall, and we went to a beach called Strangles. I don't think we went there because my wife wanted to strangle. And I don't think anyone has been strangled there, but it's called Strangles. And the thing about this beach is it's hardly anyone there because it's so hard to get to. When you climb down, you've got to get in the end on a rope ladder to get onto this beach. So not many people go there. But once you got there, it's empty and it's lovely. But it was a really, really hot day. There's only three or four other people. And me and my family decided to find some shade. So we decided to shade under a cliff. Now that isn't actually us, but it's similar. Because it was shady. And we were enjoying the day watching the beach because it was a really hot day. A bit like last week. And then this annoying guy came up to us in his Speedo swimming trunks. Are you tourists? Yeah. I'm sorry, you shouldn't stay sitting there for long. You shouldn't stay there. He said, oh, why? Because the cliff falls down. The rocks fall down, and there's these big rocks around. And he said, if you stay there too long, I'm really sorry. Just do it for your own good. I suggest you move. So we ended up moving. Now, we got annoyed with him. I was irritated with this guy, because I wanted to enjoy the beach. And this guy came wandering up. He looked like Bondi Beach, kind of Baywatch chap. And he, long hair, he's a typical, you know, surfer type. And he was like, you need to move. But that's a bit like God's heart, you see. God only tells us stuff because he loves us. Judgment is coming, but God's heart is to rescue us. He doesn't want the cliff falling on us. But we have to listen to God's message of love. Now, this bit that Christine read, it said this. It said, Jesus said, there will be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars. On the earth, nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and the tossing of the sea. The heavenly bodies will be shaken. That is Old Testament Bible language. It's called apocalyptic language. And it comes from Isaiah, the book of Isaiah. It comes from Ezekiel. It comes from the book of Joel. And what it's really describing, it's symbolic. It's talking about the cataclysmic end of the universe. And the tossing of the sea, the roaring of the sea, is a picture of chaos in the world. Jesus is saying there's going to be chaos. Chaos before I return. I mean, is that not what we see on the news? I don't think it's talking necessarily about the Atlantic Ocean, but chaos, okay? So, apocalyptic language. And it's actually a picture of decreation. What I mean by that is, you see, when God created, I don't know if you believe in the creation story in Genesis, but however you believe, whether you believe it happened quickly or over millions of years, I'll tell you this, there's order. It says about God dividing the waters, the land and the sea. I mean, however you think it happened scientifically, there is order. There are different kinds of animals. There's plant life, animal life. And it's all, or there's darkness and light. And what's happening here, the heavenly bodies are shaken, the sun and moon and stars are wobbling around, the sea's roaring. It's like God is undoing his creation. And I'll tell you why he's undoing it. Because a new world is coming, a new creation is coming at the return of Jesus Christ. And so You will keep seeing in the news lots of shocking stories. These are birth pangs. They're signs that the Lord will return. They're like when a woman is pregnant and she starts to get those birth pangs before the baby comes. This world it's got a judgment on it. But the Lord is coming to save those he loves. And there's one other verse, I hope I won't be too long, but it's in verse 27. Jesus says this. He says, at that time they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. This is linking it back with the book of Daniel, chapter 7. There's a book in the Bible called Book of Daniel, and there's a figure in it called the Son of Man. And this Son of Man isn't just an old bloke. He's not a bloke, son of John Smith. He's a divine figure, a Lord and a King, and he's going to come. And Jesus is saying, that guy's is me. All this end of creation, all this new creation, all this judgment is happening through me, Jesus. So there are two kinds of reaction to this. Two kinds of reaction according to this passage. The first kind is this, verse 26. When Jesus comes, people will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming on the world. There will be those in that day who will be terrified. People who have scoffed and laughed at Jesus. People who have ignored him and rejected him. And then there are others. There's another category of people. And in this category, Zoe is a member. When these things begin to take place, Jesus says, stand up. That means lift up your heads. It means chin up, cheer up. It means cheer up, basically. Look forward to this day because your redemption is drawing near. And redemption simply means you've been bought. You know, do any of you guys get vouchers and you redeem your voucher? You know, you've got to redeem your voucher for some money or something. Well, Jesus is saying, for those who put their trust in him and who love him, they've been bought, they've been redeemed, they're going to be saved, they're going to be rescued. And I tell you, everyone here today, the simple way you can be rescued from the coming final judgment is to simply trust in Jesus and believe in him. All you got to do is believe with all your heart, like Zoe did. Zoe didn't have to go on a Bible course. Zoe didn't have to come and become a vicar like me. Zoe didn't have to jump through 10,000 hoops and do this and do that. All you do is turn and believe and say, Lord, forgive me. We've got a banner over there, if you can see it, the blue one. I'll put it on the screen. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish. That's in the day of judgment, but have eternal life. It's dead simple to become a Christian. Now, I want you to be on the winning side. That's why I'm telling you this. Couple of other verses about this. Verses 32 and 33. Jesus said this. He said, truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Don't know if you believe that, but what it's saying is this is certainly going to happen. It's unavoidable. And you can't escape it because it says this in the next verse, or verse 35. For it will come on all those who live on the face of the whole earth. You know, you can't dodge it. Sorry, Zoe, put your name again. You can't dodge the coming of the Lord. Now, we're all going to meet Jesus. You're either going to meet him when you die, or you're going to meet him if he comes back before you die. Either way, it's going to come to everyone. And Jesus insists in this passage that he will return and bring rescue and also judgment. But here's the big question. Who today believes in this stuff? Who today believes in final judgment? It's gone out of vogue since about the 1960s. Final judgment, I don't be so old-fashioned, you know. And there's a very old lie. It's in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, when the devil spoke to Adam and Eve, and he said to them, you will not be punished. You will not die if you disobey God. It's a lie. There is this judgment. But I wanted to share with you some three positive reasons to believe in it. Okay? Three positive reasons. Well, here's the first one. It's logical. Does anyone like Star Trek here? Yeah. Well, Dr. Spock, he either says, that's very logical, or it's illogical, Captain. But in this case, the idea of the final judgment is logical. And I'll tell you why it's logical. Because, you know, we all have campaigns for justice, don't we? I mean, if you have a child and your child gets a bad mark in an exam and you think they should have got a better mark, I bet some of you would write to the school and say, hang on a minute, that teacher didn't mark that correctly. I want it remarked. You feel a sense of justice, don't you? If you get you've heard of someone getting an unfair wage, you might want to say to the boss, hey, look, this is unfair. You know, we've all got this sense of justice. If you hear about international war criminals, you want them to come to an international tribunal. There was a story in the news recently of the police. I think they hit someone with a baton and damaged them. And there was this campaign for justice. So what I'm trying to say is, if we have this cry for justice ourselves, well, surely it's not illogical to think God also will, in the end, want to bring justice and right everything that's wrong and all the sorrows of this world. He is a God of love. He is. But he's also a God of justice. Another reason why it might be good to believe in this stuff is because it's mentioned a lot in the Bible. Jesus actually spoke about it quite a lot. You know, if you take away all of what Jesus said about coming judgment, the Gospel of Luke becomes really thin. I mean, there's lots of good stuff in there about God's love, grace. But if you take it all away, all the stories, I mean, I'll tell you an example. Take away the parable of the owner of the vineyard. Take away the parable of the master of the house returning. Take away the parable of the nobleman returning. Take away the parable of the steward being summoned. Take away the scriptures that talk about the Son of Man coming back and everyone seeing him. Take it all away and you get down to quite a thin Gospel of Luke. Also, the Bible itself has stuff in it about this. Adam and Eve are called to account. Noah's generation are called to account. Pharaoh is called to account in Exodus. The God's people, Israel, are called to account. King David is called to, he commits murder, and God calls him to account. King Solomon does things, and he's called to account. It's all through. So there's one other reason. And then a third little reason why we should believe this stuff and not just say, ah, old hat, is that Jesus has proven his credibility. You know, I just want to tell you this quickly, that Jesus predicted the destruction of the temple in AD 70, and historically, it happened 37 years later. And also, Jesus said these words. Let me read this to you. Just very quickly. He said, before the destruction of Jerusalem's temple in AD 70 by the Romans, he said this, before that happens, nation will rise up against nation. There will be great earthquakes, famines, and pestilences, and a great sign from heaven. Okay? Now, Jesus is either telling the truth or he's a Nostradamus. You've heard of that guy, Nostradamus? He sort of says stuff and it's like, oh, it's a load of rubbish. No offense if you like Nostradamus. But I want to just tell you, because I studied history at my university, well, part of my history was what I studied. And I know this, that in AD 61, there was a severe earthquake in a place called Phrygia. And throughout that time, there were lots of Jewish uprisings against the Romans. There were lots of uprisings and fightings. At AD 63, Pompeii was destroyed by a volcano called Vesuvius, which was a great sign for the people back then, big clouds in the sky. There were pestilences and famines during the reign of Emperor Claudius and Emperor Nero. In AD 66, there was a rebellion by the Jews that led to the destruction of the city by the Romans, and the Romans were horrible. But also, there was a sign in heaven. There was this sign in heaven, because over Jerusalem, a Jewish historian called Josephus, he said, above the city of Jerusalem, there was a comet, okay, in the shape of a sword. But this comet stayed there for days and days and days. So Jesus actually, the stuff he talked about did happen He's not a fake, a fraud, or a charlatan. And the city that had rejected Jesus and the prophets and had stoned the prophets, crucified the Messiah, the city was eventually destroyed by the Romans. And then Jesus also said this. He said that the city of Jerusalem will be trampled on by other nations. You know, not Jewish nations, but the Gentiles, they will trample on the city of Jerusalem. Well, that's still happening today. Because if you go to Jerusalem, has anyone been to Jerusalem here? Oh, a few of you. What is built where the temple used to be? There's the Dome of the Rock, the Islamic mosque. Now, that is built on the place where the temple used to be. So, in a Jewish mind, it's being trampled on even today by other nations. So, I'm nearly finished, but don't throw this out and say, oh, load of rubbish. Think about it. Here's a question for you, or two questions. Why did Jesus tell us this stuff? Is it just to scare us? No. He tells us it because he wants us to be ready. He wants us to be prepared. That's all, because he loves us. But one thing he won't give you is a date. Isn't that annoying? Isn't it irritating? Wouldn't it be so nice if you could have a date? Oh, get your diary out. Okay, second coming of Christ. Okay, bang, job done. But you don't know. Do you know why God is not interested in giving you a date? Because he's more interested in you being ready. The Bible isn't interested in giving you a date because the Bible wants you just to be ready. That's why you don't have a date. Are you ready for the return of Jesus? So what should I do? We're coming into land now. Two practical things. Apart from the obvious, which is to trust in Jesus like Zoe. You know, Zoe, go and do what Zoe did, will you? No, God bless you all, but she's a great lady. She's an absolute star. But you know, trust in Jesus, that's the biggest thing you've got to do. But if you're a Christian, you've been going to church for a long time, or what are you meant to do practically with this stuff? Well, here's two things. The first one, it's found in verse 34. With that capital, the letters in capitals, just says, be careful. Be careful. Some translations say, watch yourself. Don't watch the signs. Oh, what is it? When's he coming? No, watch yourself. And don't rely on the pastor to watch for you. You know, don't rely on the pastor to look after you. You've got to look after yourself in this sense. You've got to make sure you're ready for the coming of the Lord. What does that mean practically? Well, it means this. Be careful or your hearts will be weighed down with carousing. What's carousing? That's a funny word. All it really means, there's not another translation, is dissipation, which is even worse. All it means is frittering away all your energies on things that don't really matter. Don't fritter away your life on stuff that doesn't really matter. What I mean by that is, you know, there are so many temptations that can easily take root if you forget the fact Jesus is going to come back. You begin to make your whole life about this life. You want to build heaven here. This is my heaven here. My career, my relationships, my house, my hobby, they're all fantastic things. But do they consume us? And we lose sight of that far horizon. Jesus is coming back. Am I living for him? Or am I living for stuff that's going to get washed away like a sandcastle at the beach? And it talks about drunkenness. Well, we all know what that is. I think that just means giving yourself to the pleasures of the world, when really the only one who can satisfy the ache in your heart is Jesus. And then the last one, anxieties of life. That's basically worries. You know, a lot of people can worry about how they look. Have I got my six pack? Spend a lot of time down the gym. There's nothing wrong with that. Or getting a good job, lots of money, or getting perfect children that get lots of grades at school. But the point is, are these things weighing you down and occupying your heart so much that the good has become the enemy of the best? You see, if you set your heart on the reality that Jesus is coming back, you will avoid certain things. You will avoid certain things that will make you feel regretful on that day. So live for your family, live for your job, etc. But live for Jesus too. Make him first. There's a lot of pressure in today's world to all swim in one direction. You know, like those fish. All those fish are going downstream, and there's one fish who's been got a bit of courage to be a bit different. That's what we've got to be like. There's so much temptation to develop and seek all our joys in this life on things that will pass away and ignore the next life to which you are all going. You're going to live forever. You're not going to just stay in the ground. You're going to live forever. But no one is found faithful accidentally. They've got to put in a bit of effort. Okay. How do you do this? This is the last point. You pray for God's help. You just pray. Say, Lord, help me. Help me. Help me not be weighed down with stuff. Help me live for you. Do you pray for yourself? Do you ask God's help for you? We need to pray for God to help us, so that we don't become sidetracked into all the distractions and dissipations of life and fritter away all our energy on things that are temporary. Let's stand firm, shall we, and look to that far horizon and live for Jesus as well as for family and jobs and everything else. This is what Zoe has chosen to do. Isn't that right, Zoe? Putting him first. God bless you. Let me pray to close. Lord, many distractions take us away from this reality. I pray you'll help me and everyone here to be awake and praying, watching, and being careful of the things we might give ourselves to that won't last. Help us to be people of the day looking forward to the return of Jesus. Amen.